this evening to turn to Psalm 85. Psalm 85. And we'll read the entire psalm. Lord, thou hast been favorable unto thy land. Thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. Thou hast forgiven the iniquity of thy people. Thou hast covered all their sin, Selah. Thou hast taken away all thy wrath. Thou hast turned thyself from the fierceness of thine anger. Turn us, O God of our salvation, and cause thine anger toward us to cease. Wilt thou be angry with us forever? Wilt thou draw out thine anger to all generations? Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? Show us thy mercy, O Lord, and grant us thy salvation. I will hear what God the Lord will speak, for he will speak peace unto his people and to his saints, but let them not turn again to folly. Surely his salvation is nigh them that fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven. Yea, the Lord shall give that which is good, and our land shall yield her increase. Righteousness shall go before him, and shall set us in the way of his steps. This 85th Psalm, we do not know who the author is, nor do we know when the psalm would have been written. The psalmist begins by looking back upon what God had done for them in salvation. We see that in the first three verses. He's talking about how God has been favorable to them, how he had brought them from captivity, forgiven their iniquity, covered their sin, put away his wrath, turned away the fierceness of his anger. So the psalmist is contemplating or considering salvation. And then in verse 5, we see that these people who had been so blessed of God in God saving their souls now had things in their life that were disapproved by God. Verse 5, he says, "Wilt thou be angry with us forever?" So we see there were things in their life that stirred God to anger. And wilt thou not draw out thine anger to all generations? In verse 4, the psalmist, realizing that they were not what they should be, he prayed, "Turn us, O God of our salvation, and cause thine anger to cease toward us." And then there is a plea in verse 7 for mercy. "Show us thy mercy, O Lord." And there is a plea for God's deliverance, implying, of course, that they were now imprisoned. "Grant us thy salvation." Different salvation than what he talked about in the first three verses. They had become stuck in some areas. And now he pleads for God's mercy. He pleads for God's deliverance. In verse 8, he declares his resolve to listen to the Lord. "I will hear what the Lord will speak. I will hear what the Lord will speak." Before that, he prayed in verse 6, Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? And that, of course, is what we want to, where we want to take our thought tonight. We just want to speak upon the subject of revival. There's so much that can be said upon the subject. We could preach for weeks concerning the need of revival. We could preach many messages concerning really what revival is, because I don't believe most people really know what it is. But this is what the psalmist prayed for. He prayed that God would revive his people. The word revive, of course, means to restore. He's praying that God would bring restoration to his people. It means to recover. There are a lot of things that we as God's people need to recover. There are a lot of things that we have surrendered. A lot of things that we have allowed to go to the wayside. To be revived is to begin to recover some of those things. To revive is to raise up. Many of God's people are cast down. To revive is to raise. To revive is to refresh. It is to renew. And oh, how we need renewal, spiritual renewal. To revive is to awaken. Many of God's people, just as it was in Paul's day, have fallen asleep. They're sound asleep. They're unaware. And they're unconcerned. And they need awakening. It means to arouse. It means to stir. It means to incite and to invigorate. And he prays that God would revive his people. That is, that God would do these things. In other words, we can't do these things for ourselves. You cannot raise yourself up spiritually. God has to do it. God has to give you the ability, the power. Spiritual revival is a time of reawakened interest in spiritual things. There isn't much interest today in the world concerning the spiritual. That doesn't really surprise us. But there isn't a whole lot of interest in the Lord's churches, and in even more so in the religious world. So a revival is to receive, is to be reawakened, to have our interest reawakened spiritually. It's a new beginning. It's a new beginning of obedience to God. Revival involves a visit from the Lord. It involves a personal visit from God. It is an outpouring from the Lord Himself. From this 85th Psalm, we want to call your attention. There are more than 12, but we want to call your attention to 12 characteristics of spiritual revival, and we'll mention these quickly. But in verse 4, we see revival involves a turning. All revival involves a change of direction. There can be no reviving if there is not a change of direction. We see also that a revival involves a bringing about an improvement concerning our relationship with God. Notice again in verse 4, and cause thine anger toward us to cease. There is an improvement in our relationship with the Lord. Revival also involves an enabling power. Notice in verse 6, "Wilt thou revive us again that, in order that thy people may rejoice in thee?" There are a lot of things that God's people are unable to do tonight because they're not in a spiritual condition to do them. There are God's people, there may be some here right now, you are not even in a condition to pray. Revival changes that. Revival gives us an enabling power. We're now able to pray. We're now able to worship. You can get in such a spiritual condition, even though you attend the house of God, that you are unable to worship God unless your spiritual condition is changed. There is an enabling power in revival. Revival also involves an open display of God's mercy. He said in verse 7, "Show us," that is, display to us, manifest to us, demonstrate to us thy mercy. And in all revival, there is a display of God's mercy. There is a manifestation of God's mercy. Revival involves a deliverance. Again in verse 7, "O Lord, and grant us thy salvation." In revival, we are delivered. We are delivered from the chains that hold us. We are delivered from the bondage that we find ourselves in. We are set free from the snares that we have fallen in. Revival changes things. Revival involves God speaking and God's people hearing what God says. Again, verse 8, "I will hear what the Lord will speak." God always speaks in His house. Every time we assemble, God speaks. And God speaks to each one. But people do not always listen. People do not always hear what God says. But in revival, not only does God speak, and not only does God speak clearly, but there is a hearing of what God says. There is also, revival involves a break from folly. Verse 8, the last part of that verse says, "But let them not turn again to folly." Revival breaks away from that which is foolish. Verse 9, "Surely his salvation is nigh them that fear him." Revival involves a reverence for God. You cannot experience revival and have a disrespect of God. You cannot experience revival and have a nonchalant attitude toward God. In all revival, there is a reverence for God. Reverence for God is renewed in all revival. Revival involves a manifestation of His glory. Again, verse 9, "That thy glory may dwell in our land." The glory of God is the radiation of God. It is God leaving an impression upon our lives. That's revival. Revival is God radiating, God manifesting Himself, and God making an impression and leaving an impression upon our hearts. So often we leave worship services without any impression whatsoever being made upon hearts. Revival leaves an impression upon the heart of God's people. Revival involves the blessings of God. In verse 12, "Yea, the Lord shall give that which is good." Revival brings the blessings of the Lord. Revival also involves fruitfulness. In verse 12, "Our land shall yield her increase." And then revival also involves conformity. to God's ways. Righteousness shall go before him, and he shall set us in the way of his steps. Revival involves not just some of these things. Revival involves all of these things. When a soul is revived, they experience every one of these things and much, much more. There is such a thing. There is such a thing, though it is rare today, there is such a thing as revival. There is real revival. There is true revival. Now again, we've said many, many times, I do not believe that we will ever experience a nationwide revival. I do not believe that the United States will ever experience a revival. I do believe that the Lord's churches can be revived. I do believe from time to time that the Lord's churches will experience reviving. And that ought to always be our hope. It ought to always be our expectation. Every week, every time we assemble together, that ought to be our desire that we would be revived. But a real and true revival never is without an inner disturbance of man's comfort. See, today, many want, they've settled in, they've snuggled in, they're comfortable in their spirituality, and they want nothing to disturb their nest. But revival always involves an inner disturbance of comfort. A revival is never, ever without personal change. We want revival where we can pick to change, what areas we'll change in. Revival involves personal change, and you have no say in the matter. You do not dictate to God what is changed. But revival involves personal change. And revival is never without man relinquishing control of his life. Considering these things, it seems to me that many times when God's people assemble together, they're fighting against the reviving power of God. They fight against it because they're holding on. We're not letting go of this. I'll let go of something over here, and I might let go of this, but I'm holding on to this. All revival involves a relinquishing control of your life. And believe it or not, you're not in control anyway. But most people think they are. And they do not want to give up the control that they think that they have. But all revival involves a relinquishing of control that you think you have of your life. No revival comes without total commitment. Total. Total commitment. Revival causes total commitment. Revival does not come without upending lives. In revival, lives are turned upside down. They are changed drastically. That's a revival. True, real and true revival will not allow you to stay in tune with the world. Real and true revival will not let you stay in tune with the opinions and the philosophies of the world. Real and true revival will welcome God's will into our lives. A real and true revival will welcome God's ways into our lives. In all real and true revival, the Holy Spirit of God pricks and smites the heart concerning sin. You cannot be revived ignoring your sin. You cannot be revived excusing your sin. You cannot be revived minimizing your sin. You cannot be revived by hiding your sin, or by justifying it, or by defending it. And many fight against revival because the Spirit of God pricks their heart concerning a certain sin, and immediately, sitting in the very house of God, they justify it in their minds. They excuse it, struggling and fighting against the reviving power of the Lord. The revival will not come without man being brought face to face with the sin. In revival, specific sins are revealed in our lives. Revival does not deal with sin in generalities. The Spirit of God does not deal with sin in generalities. He gets specific. That's what we mean by disturbing the comfort. Disturbing the comfort. Specific sins are revealed, and they are seen in their true character. This is what happens when people are brought face to face with their sins under the reviving power of God. And as a result of this, people are brought low. Revival is not making men feel good about themselves. Revival is not making men feel comfortable in their sins. Revival brings individuals low. Revival convicts us of our sin. Revival burdens us, so burdens us of our sins that we have to get rid of them. We have to confess them. We have to turn from them. That's revival. Revival, when God brings us face to face with our specific sins, our hearts are broken. That's revival. You can't have revival without your heart being broken over sin. And in all real and true revival, as the Spirit of God brings us face to face with our sin and brings us low because of our sin, now we're not excusing it, we're not minimizing it, we're not defending it, we're not justifying it, but instead we hate it. We hate our sin. And we hate it so much that we turn from it, that we leave it, that we forsake it, that we flee from our sin. You see, in all real and true revival, there is victory. Also, in all real and true revival, hearts are changed. Hearts are changed. We've already said revival brings change. And the change starts in the heart. And when the heart is changed, lives are changed. That's automatic. You cannot have your heart changed without having your life changed. And revival changes hearts. That heart that is cold, that heart that is calloused, under the reviving power of God, that heart is made tender. And that heart is warmed. The heart is changed. That heart that is deaf to the voice of God. That heart that is deaf to the leadings of God is changed into a responsive heart. Those hearts that are so crowded, so packed full, so distracted, so pulled with the things and ways of the world, that heart has changed. And that heart now becomes focused upon the things of God. That heart becomes fascinated and enthralled with the things of God. And that heart becomes absorbed with the Lord and the things of the Lord. Recently had a conversation with Brother Kraft, and I've had this conversation with other missionaries as well. I'm talking about foreign missionaries. And they're always, they can't wait to get back to whatever country they're laboring in. And it's not just because that they have a burden for the people. Certainly they do. But Brother Kraft made this statement. He said, "Brother Dan, I can hardly stand it. It is that bad in our churches. I can hardly stand it. I can hardly stand the spirit, the worldliness." And it's not that these things don't exist other places, but we are packed full with the world, where we can barely worship the Lord. And we've gotten used to it. And that's what's so sad. That's what's so truly sad. Again, I remember when I went to Honduras, and I brought this up before, one lady, she was in her 90s, climbed a mountain to get to church. Folks, people won't drive very far today to get to the house of God. The interest is not there. Revival changes hearts. Those hearts that are filled with their own selfish ways and their own selfish agendas, those hearts are changed into a submissive heart. Those hearts that are so complacent, so unconcerned, are changed into a heart that has a passion for the spiritual. Those hearts that are so proud, those hearts that are so self-righteous. We are self-righteous. Americans are self-righteous people. Now, that may offend some folks, but it's the truth. And that has carried over in the Lord's churches. And hearts are filled with self-righteousness. But in revival, self-righteous hearts are humbled. That heart that is oblivious and unthankful is changed into a heart that acknowledges God, into a heart that is filled with thanksgiving. That heart that is so troubled, so distressed, is changed into a heart that is filled with peace. Changed into a heart that is filled with the assurance of God. That heart that is dry and that heart that is joyless is changed into a heart with a song. Revival changes hearts. Revival fills a heart with a desire to be more like Christ, to be more fully surrendered to the Lord. It longs to be obedient to the Lord. It longs to be more closely identified with the Lord. A real and true revival restores the wonder of God's salvation, restores the wonder of the blessings of God. So in all true and real revival, hearts are changed. And as we've mentioned, lives also are changed. It's sad when God's people begin to go in the wrong direction. When God's people take the wrong road. When God's people forsake the narrow paths. And when their hearts are inclined, when their hearts are bent from the Lord. It is not only sad, but it is extremely dangerous when people go in the direction that cost you the things of God. When will some people figure this out? Very simple truth. If it costs you anything spiritual, you lose. You lose. Oh, I had such a great time. If it cost you God in any way, you lost. You lose. If we go away from God, we lose. If it cost us fellowship with God, we lose. Every single time. And there are many people, they've been going in the wrong direction for years. And they lose day after day after day. But revival reverses direction. When hearts are revived, they change the way they live. And the reason their lives are changed is because their hearts are changed. There's no need to try and change a life without the heart being changed. If the heart isn't changed and the life is changed, that's just hypocrisy. That's formalism. That's not spirituality. Revival changes the heart. And as a result, lives are changed. There are many people today, they just have an emergency religion. That's all they have. When they get in trouble, when things aren't going right, they cry out to God. They have an emergency religion. When things aren't going right, they'll go to church for a while, as long as they can stand it. It's usually about 2 weeks max. Emergency religion. Revival will change that. Revival will give you more than just an emergency religion. A lot of people sitting in Baptist churches today have a passed down religion. Their religion has been passed down by grandma and grandpa and by mom and by dad. You need more than a passed down religion. You need a personal experience of God. And revival will change a passed down religion. Revival will make it real in your life. A real and true revival will change one's attitude toward the Word of God, will change one's attitude toward the Lord's house, will change one's attitude toward God's people, will change one's attitude toward prayer, will change one's attitude toward worship. And on and on and on we can go. A real and true revival will fill us with excitement towards spiritual things. Again, people today, they'll come into church and they're watching the score of a ball game on a phone a minute before services. You're not worshiping. You're not prepared to worship. And then as soon as they get out, they run out to the car to see what the score is. You might as well have just stayed home and watched it. Oh, but that wouldn't look right. What would people think? They'd think that you weren't right with God. You're not. And we could go on. But we bring things into the house of God that makes it impossible to worship the Lord. to worship God in spirit and in truth. I wonder what would happen. I have a pretty good idea. But I wonder what would happen if I sat down here and played with a cell phone all the way until the time I got up here and then turned it off. And I'm not talking about folks who have Bible problem. That's not a Bible problem on a phone. That's not what I'm talking about. And then I say, well, the Cubs won. Thought you all would like to know that. Now let's worship. It's not going to happen. You wouldn't have a preacher like that, I hope. But somehow it's right for church members. And if a pastor gets on these subjects, he's out of touch. God's people need help today. Because God's people, for the most part, do not have any idea what is involved in worship. None. And the psalmist simply prayed, wilt thou not revive us again? That shows that the simple fact that he prayed that shows that he believed that revival was possible. That it was possible. It's not a dream. It's not pie in the sky thinking. It's reality. And it is possible. For those who are spiritually stagnant, revival is possible. For those who are spiritually empty, revival is possible. For those who are spiritually barren, revival is possible. For those who are in a spiritual decay and spiritual wreckage, revival is possible. Revival is possible. And revival does happen. I hope that we all have experienced personally times of revival. I hope that we have all been in some church services where there was a revival. But most have to go back a long time to remember those things. That should not be so. Because every time we meet ought to be a time of reviving. I have been in services. You have been in services when God came down and met with people. Where people just fall on their knees and cry out to God. Oh, we had a great revival. We had 35 people come forward. That does not constitute a revival. The question is, what did those 35 people do when they walked out the door? That's the question. So we can't measure revival by how many people came forward. You can only measure revival by change the hearts and lives. That's a revival. Oh, the singing, the special singing was great at our revival meeting. That's not a revival. That's not what constitutes revival. The psalmist, by praying, wilt thou not revive us again, recognized the source of revival. The psalmist understood that revivals do not come from men. No man can produce a real and true spiritual revival. No man can bring it about. The abilities of man cannot produce revival. The plans of man cannot produce revival. Churches, when they have scheduled revival meetings, they make plans. They plan all kinds of things. But But all your plans will not bring about revival. Never has, never will. All the methods of man will not bring about a revival. Oh, this brother over here, he's a good preacher. I think the people would like to hear him. He would be a good one for revival. The methods of man does not produce revival. And all the calculations of man does not produce revival. The messages of man does not produce revival. I have heard unbelievable, tremendous messages preached, and no one revived. No one stirred. No one moved. It's not the message of man that produces a revival. It's not the personalities of man. It's not the personality of the preacher that brings about revival. Oh, we're going to have this one in because the young people just love this guy. That's not what produces revival. Never has, never will. No amount of expenditure can produce revival. You cannot buy revival. Cannot be done. There's not enough money in the world to create a revival. And a real and true revival is not merely you and I hearing a message, considering what we heard. We begin to weigh what we heard, and as a result, we make a decision. That's not revival either. Revival is a change of heart and a change of life, and it comes directly from God, and it is the work of God. It is the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. It is the inner working and the inner stirring of the Spirit of God. It is the inner movement of God that causes an inner disturbance within our souls. It is the inner exertion of God that compels you and I as individuals to follow the leadings and promptings of God. It is God working in us where we have to obey Him, where we have to get right with God, where we come to the end of ourselves and we say, I've gone far enough. I'm tired of doing it my own way. I'm going to obey God. That's revival. And it goes on past the meeting. The best way to measure revival is a month or two after the meeting. That's the best way to determine if we've really experienced a revival. Now in this prayer, no doubt the psalmist felt a need for revival, and he also had a desire for revival. The need of revival was painfully obvious to the psalmist. Because of our sinful flesh, because of our natural inclinations away from God, because of the work of Satan and his minions, and because of the draining effect upon the world, and because of the fact that we can fall into a sad spiritual state, the fact that we can decline spiritually, that we can get in a state of coldness and apathy, that we can get in a state of distance and detachment from God. There are many of God's people that are detached from the Lord, detached from the things of God. We can get in a state of emptiness. We can get in a state of bareness and a state of spiritual collapse and a state of stagnation. And because of all of these things, every single one of us without exception, to one degree or another, needs reviving. I don't think that there is anyone here that would argue the need for revival. I believe we all see that there is a need. There is a personal need of reviving. And the psalmist realized that when he prayed, "Wilt thou not revive us?" He realized the need. So it's not a question of need. We need the reviving of the Lord. The psalmist, when he prayed this, he did so because he desired reviving. And this is the question. Again, it's not a question of need. It is a question of desire. Do we want reviving from God? 15-20 years ago, I preached a message on proofs that we do not need, that we do not desire, that we do not want a revival from God. Upset a lot of folks, but it's true. We could point out many things that point to the fact that most do not want revival. Oh, they want revival by their definition. They want revival on their terms. But do we really want a revival from God? That is not an unreasonable question. Look at the lives of God's people. That is not an unreasonable question. Do we want revival? Do I? Do you want a reviving from God? We need to honestly answer that question. Do I want a revival from God that will upend my life? Do I want that kind of revival? That's what revival does. It upends lives. Do I want my life upended? Well, Brother Dan, I've got a few areas, but not my whole life. You want revival on your terms then. Do we want a revival that will upend my life? Do we want a revival that may cause some to quit their jobs and may cause some to forsake their family and may cause some to forsake their friends? Do we want that kind of revival? Not many. Not many. But revival upends lives. Do I want a reviving from God that may disturb my comfort zone? Do I want a revival from God that may cause me to move out of my comfort zone? Is that the kind of revival? Do I want that kind of revival? That's what revival does. Do I want a reviving from God that causes me to relinquish control of my life, causes me to let go of my ways, causes me to let go of my thinking and my opinions? Do we want that kind of revival? That's what revival is. Do we really want, do we really desire reviving? Do I want a reviving that will result in my plans being canceled, my plans being put on hold? Do I want that kind of revival? That's what real revival does. I'm sorry, but I don't believe there's a whole lot of folks that want it. And that's why every church service, there's so many fighting against it. Tooth and nail, they're fighting against the leadings of the Spirit of God. Do I want a revival that will not allow me to stay in tune with the world? It will not allow me to stay in tune with that which is ungodly. Do I want a revival that will make me more identifiable with Jesus Christ? Again, it's not a question tonight of need. We need reviving. Every one of us need reviving, some more than others, no question. But this isn't a contest who needs it the most. It's not a question of need. But I do believe it is a question of desire. Are you willing? Are you willing to cry with the psalmist, "Wilt thou not revive us again?" That tells me that he'd been revived in the past when he used that word again. One revival will not do, because you and I will fall. We'll grow cold again. We'll get stagnant. We'll grow empty. We'll grow barren again. And therefore we need reviving over and over and over again. We do not plan revival meetings. We make preparations to have a meeting. And we hope and we pray that God would send revival. We're in the last days. We don't have much further to go. We need to be revived for the final push. For the final push in serving the Lord like we ought to. Homes need revived. Marriages need revived. Churches need revived. Pastors need revived. We all need revived. Wilt thou not revive us again? Now I've noticed through the years, whether I've preached revival meetings or led the church to hold such meetings, things do happen during most so-called revival meetings. That is, it seems like some people, you get more people to come forward usually. But again, that doesn't determine a revival. But things do happen. And I believe there's some reasons for that. I believe from observation that God's people have a tendency to pray more for a so-called special meeting. And I don't like that term, because all meetings should be special. But for a so-called special meeting than they do Sunday, Wednesday. We need to be praying every church service, "Lord, revive my heart." It really doesn't concern me that much, because I've noticed enough through the years how many people come forward. What concerns me is how they leave and how they come back. That's what I'm concerned with. Because I've seen people come forward and go out and do the very same thing they came forward for. Seen it happen many times. Pray. Pray that God would revive our hearts. And you know how Home Baptist Church will be revived? If I'm revived, if you're revived, if you're revived, if each one of us are revived individually, that's a church revival. That's a church revival. And if every single member, though we know that won't happen because every single member won't be here, and I'm not talking about those who are providentially hindered or what have you. But if every single member who attended is truly revived, what a difference. What a change that it would make. Not just a change in the week or a month. Perhaps a change in history of Home Baptist Church. Perhaps a change in the direction of Home Baptist Church. You know what happens when individuals in a church begin to go in the wrong direction? The churches go in the wrong direction.
There may be a few people holding on and trying to go in the right direction, but I've got news for you. If the majority is going in the wrong direction spiritually, so is the church. And they don't have to be going in the wrong direction outwardly. I'm talking about inwardly, in the heart. God help us. We stand in desperate need of reviving. And only God. Only God can do it. I've been revived many times. Many, many times God has quickened me, refreshed me, stood me up. Oh, what a joy to be refreshed spiritually. As I prepare for messages, usually I'll prepare 5-6 messages and don't preach any of them. Those were all for me. And God uses those to revive my heart over and over and over again. Thousands and thousands of messages I've never preached that God gave me just for me to get me prepared to preach what He did give. Those messages that are prepared and never preached are never a waste of time. I tell myself that over and over and over again because it was for me. We all need reviving. Don't even pray, Lord, revive the person next to me, revive my wife, revive my husband. You pray that God would revive your heart. And that's where it begins. And God will give us a blessed time. Brother Larry, you come and lead us in singing.